And welcome back to the Eye on College Football podcast here on CBSSports.com. You have tuned in to the Week 14 Expert Picks podcast. I am joined, as always, by Mr. Jerry Hinnon, Mr. Tom Fornelli. Gentlemen, it is a sad, sad day as we have reached sort of the last full slate of college football, but with all the rivalries and with all the conference title races that we have, we are at no shortage of excitement here. Jerry, for you first, what do you have any Thanksgiving football traditions that that you're looking forward to outside of, you know, obviously ingesting as much college football as you can?
No, that's pretty much it. I think the closest thing I have to a tradition, yeah, is just sitting down and injecting as much college football into my tryptophan laced eyeballs as I possibly can.
Now, you and your brother each have a little bit of investment in the Iron Bowl, correct?
This is correct. Anyways, I grew up an Auburn guy. My youngest brother did a thing that I don't know if this happens in other sort of house divided type states, but in Alabama it's not uncommon for children to rebel against their parents in their teenage years by picking the opposite team to root for. It's kind of funny. I went out to buy some Thanksgiving food supplies yesterday and ran into a dad who had both an Auburn and an Alabama, like, rooting son with him. The older was an Auburn guy. He was an Alabama guy, and the youngest son was an Alabama fan. So this is a thing that happens, and it happened in my family, and I love my brother dearly, but it does occasionally make for some Thanksgiving awkwardness, yeah?
Yeah, okay. Well,
if it makes you feel better, Jerry, my dad's got 10 brothers and sisters.
Uh-huh.
He's the only White Sox fan.
Well, there you go.
And you?
Well, that's because I'm his kid, but I'm saying out of his 10 brothers and sisters growing up, my dad rebelled in one way by choosing the White Sox over the Cubs.
Oh, I got you. Well, we are going to start right there at the Iron Bowl because this is arguably one of the – it could end up, depending on sort of how the game plays out, this could end up being one of those historic Iron Bowls through the entire series just because – of not just what one team has on the line, this is what both teams have on the line. In the case of Alabama, you are still in the pursuit of that third straight BCS title. You have been undefeated. You've checked off every box, and now they just need to go into Jordan-Hare and take care of the Tigers. They are 10.5-point favorites. On the other side, Auburn has a chance to steal the SEC West from Alabama, and this in Gus Malzahn's first year, a turnaround from the 3-9 season. Tom, I want to start here. First of all, let's sort of pick the game apart before we get down to our actual against the spread picks. What do you think is going to be the most important area of the game for Auburn as a 10.5-point underdog in order to try and keep this close and give themselves a chance to win late?
For me, I think the key will be how Auburn's defense actually holds up against the Alabama offense, simply because I feel like Auburn will be able to move the ball on Alabama because we've seen Gus Malzahn has been able to move the ball against Alabama a few years ago. So I think Auburn's defense will be the key in whether or not it's going to win this game or at least keep it close. And I'm thinking that Auburn is going to keep it close simply because they're 9-2 against the spread this year as it is. They've covered in their 8 straight games. And, you know, when I see that kind of trend and I just see how well Auburn's been playing, if you want to give me 10.5 points with this Auburn team at home in a game this important to both teams, I will take them.
Jerry, we talked a few weeks back, actually for the LSU game, sort of that if there was any particular weakness in this Alabama defense, which really has been tremendous. It is a defensive unit that, in typical Alabama fashion, has been playing some of its best football here in recent weeks. Do you think that Nick Marshall will be able to try and take advantage of those cornerbacks and try and get the passing game going? Because in my opinion, as great as that rushing attack has been with Marshall, with Trey Mason, with Corey Grant and Cameron Artis Payne, they need to be able to not get stuck being one-dimensional against this Alabama defense because that's normally when the Alabama defense wins. Do you think that will be a way that Auburn's offense can get rolling?
It's going to have to be on first and second downs for Nick Marshall. I think if you get Auburn into a situation where it's third and six, third and seven, Nick Marshall's not going to have a lot of success. He's not an Aaron Murray type that's going to sit in the pocket, and you know, you don't necessarily worry about third and long because you know your quarterback can make that kind of a play into coverage. That's not really Nick Marshall's strength. What Gus Malzahn is going to ask him to do is hit some of these deep balls on first and second down, try to catch Alabama napping a little bit. Their corners, you know, again, if you're going to sort of isolate one weakness in the Alabama defense, it might be that their corners, Deion Ballou, you know, is their main guy, maybe aren't quite up to Alabama's standard of recent seasons playing one-on-one. They're still outstanding, but as we saw, you know, going back to this Texas A&M game, you know, they aren't foolproof. So I think one way Gus Malzahn's going to try to get some big plays going is to, you know, on first and second down when Alabama is committing those extra guys to the running game to get them stopped, is to look over the top to Sammy Coates, who has been an excellent deep threat all season long. And Nick Marshall has largely done a good job of finding him on those deep balls over the top. But at the same time, Marshall hasn't been absolutely perfect. Malzahn's system, frankly, has gotten Coates open for a number of big bombs, one in particular in that Texas A&M game towards the end of the first half, which Marshall has not been able to capitalize on. This is the sort of game where Auburn has got to land some haymakers when they have the opportunity, and I think this is going to be a big factor when you're talking about Auburn's passing game. I don't think it's necessarily about, you know, are they going to be able to convert, you know, on third down as much as are they going to be able to make these huge plays on first and second down.
Yeah, Nick Marshall, very much a question on third and seven, third and eight. But, Jerry, if you get him on fourth and 18, I think he's got just the answer for you.
Clearly.
All right, so we are 5 out of 6 picking Auburn to cover the number at 10.5, but 6 out of 6 taking Alabama straight up. Jeremy Fowler has the tide rolling. So I want to ask each of you, first you, Jerry, what do you have as a general score? I'm not going to make you pin it, but give me an idea of where you think
this is.
That's
fine. You can ask me to pin it. I'm down with 27-26 is my official score. I think it's going to be a one-possession game at the end. I think the 2009 game between these teams, even though it was a little bit different, that one Alabama already had the West sewn up, and they were kind of looking forward to a matchup with Florida in the SEC championship game the following week. You know, they were still undefeated, had the rock-solid defense, and were going to Auburn to face a Gus Malzahn offense that you knew was going to pull out all the stops. You know, Auburn is better this time around, but Alabama's offense is better. The defense is about the same. But clearly Auburn's going to have much more of Alabama's attention, I think, this go round. You know, so I'm expecting when all of that kind of cancels itself out, you're left with a very similar game to 2009 where Auburn feeds off of the crowd. The atmosphere is going to be absolutely ridiculous. You know, makes some big plays early in the game and then tries to hang on as the game progresses against that Alabama running game. My very vague lean is that they're not going to be able to quite do it. I don't think Auburn has shown enough defensively in the front seven in particular to think they're going to be able to hang in there for 60 minutes against Alabama. But, again, my official, you know, prediction is that it is one way or another going to come down to the final drive for either team.
Tom, what's your score?
35-27 Alabama.
I'm going
tied.
I'm going with 30-22 Alabama, and with so much hype around A.J. McCarron, I'm feeling a T.J. Yeldon big game. Tom wrote about earlier this year after the LSU game how it always seems to be that in the biggest games and the biggest moments, T.J. Yeldon is the guy that does it. And I think that will be – they'll just hand the rock to him in the second half, and I think he might just have a big day.
God, I hope so, because I'm tired of this McCarron for Heisman crap.
Wow. Tell us how you truly feel.
I think A.J. McCarron is a very good quarterback. I do not think he is a Heisman Trophy winner. That's not a damn career award.
If he balls, though, then the people who are supporting...
I don't care. He's not even in the top 10 in any of the major passing statistics. Why? How? And all of a sudden, he's Heisman guy now. Just simply because the other guys had a bad week. We already had this discussion on the rewind, but no.
But if not, all right, we're moving on to moving on to the big house. Number three, Ohio State, all alone in the on-deck circle of the BCS. They have locked up the division, and they will be playing Michigan State next week in the Big Ten championship game. The Wolverines are really, really hurting right now. 12.5-point underdogs at home, even making matters even worse for Michigan. The Ohio State defense is getting healthy. Tom, starting with you here, are you giving Michigan a chance to keep this close at all, or are you sort of making your pick assuming that Ohio State might be looking ahead to the Big Ten championship game?
I feel like I should give Michigan a chance simply because of what game this is and how important it is for both schools, but I just do not see it happening simply because Michigan has been playing so poorly in the last few weeks. And I think Ohio State is just simply a much better team than the Wolverines are now. And I think their coaches have a much better idea of how the hell to coach their team than Michigan coaches do at the moment. So I do not think this game is going to be very close. Me and Jerry talked about this earlier this week, and we were both pretty much of the opinion that if this was less than a 21-point spread, we were taking Ohio State with ease. And that's why I'm going with the Buckeyes. But since, you know, I should provide like a fact or something, I'll just say how Ohio State has gone 4-0-1 against the spread in the last five meetings.
Oh, dang. Jerry, you got anything else? I mean, I'm right there with you, Tom, and apparently Jerry too. I don't see how this is close at all.
Michigan, you know, you look at their record at 7-4 and you think, you know, well, why do things seem to be in such a crisis mode? It's because so many of those wins have just been by the absolute skin of their teeth. You know, they needed the sort of crazy fire drill field goal to beat Northwestern, who, by the way, is terrible at this stage. You know, they needed the last second escape from Akron. They were down to UConn. You know, with the exception of that, frankly, in retrospect, bizarre blowout win of Minnesota, you know, and then going all the way back to the Notre Dame game as well. You know, it's just not a team that's played like it deserves to be a less than 2-touchdown underdog to Ohio State, especially the way Ohio State's playing at the moment. Ohio State is going to put up, we know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 35 to 40 points, maybe even more if Braxton Miller really kind of gets things going and Urban Meyer leaves him in the game. And I don't see Michigan scoring more than 17 at the absolute maximum this game. Their offense, I just saw on Twitter earlier today, is averaging 3.3 yards per play in the month of November, which over the entire season would rank dead last in the FBS, below Miami of Ohio. And not even close. I think Miami of Ohio is at 3.7 yards per play. So that tells you how badly this Michigan offense is struggling. And I don't think playing Ohio State is the way to fix it. There's going to be a truckload of Buckeye fans all over that stadium. It just, to me, shapes up as an absolutely miserable Saturday for Michigan. Sorry, Wolverines.
It is so interesting because in this long week of traditional rivalries, and there's, you know, so much history, you know, this is really the Iron Bowl and Ohio State Michigan as far as the brand of it. They are right there at the top, and it just seems like I put them in contrast here at the beginning of the show, just because you've got both teams have home double digit dogs, but one home double digit dog believes not only will they keep this close, Auburn fans believe they will win this. I don't think Michigan fans believe there's even a chance.
No, they do not.
Yeah, it's just very, very different.
I'm not even sure Michigan fans want to win this game, to be honest with you, because I think they're afraid it'll save Al Borges' job.
It's time to make some changes. Texas A&M, after getting Johnny Manziel, if he is Superman, his kryptonite is John Chavis and the LSU defense. They are going to try and turn it around as they go on the road to Missouri. Missouri is a 4.5-point favorite at home, and man, the Tigers have just the largest stakes. Win this game, and you win the SEC East, which for Gary Pinkel and this Missouri program that was just absolutely taken through the mud last season and this offseason, being able to claim an SEC East title in your second year in the league, that would be something. Franklin comes back. Mock plays a little bit. I wouldn't say there was my needle moved either way for that, but the Missouri rushing attack certainly dominated as Missouri took care of business at Ole Miss. Jerry, last week we talked about expecting a shootout and not seeing that is definitely a credit to LSU's defense, but I almost want to shy away from assuming a shootout in this game too, and I could see like a 31-27 or somewhere in the 30s rather than a 40s or so score.
Yeah, no, Missouri's defense is too good to expect that kind of game. You know, we've seen it week in, week out. Michael Sam, EJ Gaines, those guys are absolutely legit. And for my money, like beating Ole Miss by two touchdowns on the road was Missouri's most impressive performance of the season. Like that's the same team in the same stadium where A&M needed a last-minute drive to pull out a win, where LSU trailed the entire game and lost. It is not easy to go to this particular site and beat that particular team at this point in time under Hugh Freeze. It's just not a simple thing to do. Missouri made it look like it was. I was extremely impressed, and so of course, being the idiot I am, I took A&M against the spread here. I think. Finally, I just think you can't get too caught up in what you saw the week before, and I wonder if Missouri just looked a little bit too good and A&M just looked a little bit too bad against John Chavis's defense, which we already knew had given Johnny Manziel fits. We know this is, Manziel's last regular season game. It's been kind of a tougher season than expected for A&M in some ways. I think they're really going to come out focused for this one. I don't know. I find reasons to think A&M's going to cover this, and then I think every time I've doubted Missouri this season, they've proved me absolutely wrong. And so, I don't know. This is not one I feel comfortable with either way. I've got Missouri straight up, A&M covering the 4.5 to kind of hedge my bets, but I'm not feeling confident.
Yeah, if A&M's going to cover or even win this game, going to need big and improved play from that rush defense. Tom, you have Texas A&M along with Jerry and Bruce Feldman. We are split 3-3 as Dennis Dodd, Jeremy Fowler, and myself all taking Missouri to win and cover that 4.5. What are you liking about A&M?
Honestly, I'm not liking much.
Oh, okay.
this is a game that I don't really feel comfortable with it all. And essentially what it came down to for me was ignoring the facts that are in front of me, because in the last month and a half, Texas A&M has been that team for me where no matter how I pick it, it just does the opposite. So I look at this and I see how well Mizzou has done against the spread this year and how well it's played against the spread at home. And then I compare that to what Texas A&M does. And those numbers tell me pick Mizzou. But since the things have been going the opposite, I figure I should pick A&M. And also simply because I've said for a few weeks now that I didn't think Missouri was going to hang on to win the SEC East. So I guess I'm going to put up or shut up when it comes to that.
I this game, and we will get to locks and quarantines later, but this game is, I would say, the highest honor of quarantine in that I want to watch every second of it, but I wouldn't want to bet a penny.
Yeah, I agree.
Yep.
All right, so we are going from there out to the Grand Canyon State, where Arizona is going to play Arizona State in Tempe. And the Sun Devils lock up the Pac-12 South. A really big accomplishment for Todd Graham. As much fun as we have talking about those wristbands and that NSYNC headset that he wears, he has done a good job of sort of installing this aggressive offensive and defensive philosophy. And now the Sun Devils have a chance. Not only they've already gotten to the Pac-12 title game, but a win against the Wildcats will lock up home field. So instead of having to go play at the Farm where they already lost to Stanford, they would be able to host that game. Arizona, of course, coming off a giant upset against Oregon. Kadeem Carey is outrageous. 42 carries, I believe. And I love this. Rich Rod looked at the stat sheet. And he said, if we had another possession, I probably would have given it to him 7 or 8 more times, as he was just eating the Ducks alive. Let's start right with you, Tom. What are you looking at in this game? You have ASU covering. Jeremy has ASU covering. Bruce has ASU covering. Jerry and Dennis and myself on Arizona. What do you like about the Sun Devils here?
Simply put, I just feel that Arizona State has been a much better team at home this season. And there's also the fact that I really don't think Arizona can do what they did to Oregon 2 weeks in a row. I feel like there's going to be a letdown, but also mostly because Kadeem Carey ate Oregon alive, like you mentioned, especially that defensive front seven of the Ducks. But I don't think Kadeem Carey can do that against Arizona State because Arizona State has Will Sutton sitting right there in the middle. So I think that the Wildcats will have trouble finding that effective of a run game. Kadeem Carey's going to get his yards, but he's not going to have 42 carries for a million yards like he did against Oregon last week. So because of that, and also because Arizona State, they've clinched the division, sure, but they could still win home field advantage in the Pac-12 championship game by winning this game. So it's a very important game for the Sun Devils. So because of that, I think they're going to put their rival to bed.
The Sun Devils, Taylor Kelly and Marion Grice get a lot of love, but I wanted to at least have a little bit of air time. Got to give some love to Jalen Strong, another part of that offense that has sort of helped them be able to get up and get humming. Jerry, what do you like about this? Do you see this being a Kadeem Carey impacted game? Because one thing that stood out to me was even B.J. Danker. I mean, he played his best game of the season, making yes. all the right reads. And I, even though both teams like to go up-tempo, I feel like Arizona has a decent chance to try and at least, I don't know, 12.5 seems like a lot to me.
Right. This was another tough one for me to call because, as Tom points out, Arizona State has been much better at home this season, and under Todd Graham, they've been very good as a home favorite. And Arizona, if I remember correctly, hasn't been quite as good on the road. But 12.5 to me is a lot to give up when this is a rivalry game and Arizona State, you know, as Tom points out, home field advantage is still on the line. But I still think they probably feel like the big heavy lifting was done last week, like going to UCLA and wrapping up the division title. I think is still going to be sort of a, you know, not necessarily we're at the top of the mountain, but, you know, they're only a few rungs below the top, and, you know, they probably feel like the really tough work is behind them. So I think Arizona can sort of catch them, not necessarily napping, but maybe just not at absolute maximum focus. I still got Arizona State winning this game. I do think, you know, it worries me, like I said, that Arizona State has been so good at home. But Rich Rod has been much, much better as an underdog across, you know, the length of his career, going even back to West Virginia. And we saw it again last week. He's capable of engineering these big kinds of upsets. And if you're giving me, you know, Rich Rod in this situation with 12.5 points, I think I've got to take, you know, that many points in this rivalry situation.
UCLA and USC, both teams eliminated from that Pac-12 South race thanks to Arizona State's impressive win in Westwood last week. But, man, this is still the battle for Los Angeles. And a little bit interesting, Jim Mora said this week, told reporters that his Pac-12 Coach of the Year vote was for Coach Orgeron. I will at least start by posing this either to both of you. I don't even think that's necessarily like, Jim Mora is supporting the rival. I don't know who else gets that vote other than maybe Todd Graham.
It would have to be Graham.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe David Shaw, you know, but he lost those two games. I think it would have to either be Graham or Orgeron, and I think you can absolutely make a case that it's Orgeron for, you know, the Trojans were miserable. They lost to Washington State at home, and then they got buried at Arizona State. They were terrible. They looked completely lost, and they beat Stanford since then. Like, those set of results right there are really all the argument you need for Orgeron in some ways.
Then why are you beefing with the Trojans and picking against them against the spread?
Me? Because I think they've played their best games already, and I think, you know, UCLA, I think they're stinging from that loss last week. I think they're ready to play much better this week. I think Brett Hundley, you know, we saw in the second half of that game, is still capable of changing games with both his arm and his legs. And I think, you know, just you look at the course of the entire season, and I think UCLA is still the better team a little bit. You know, it's not decisive. But I think, you know, I just feel like this is one of those escalator games where one team is sort of due to play a very good game and the other maybe is due to play a little bit less, not out of focus or, you know, this is a big game, obviously, for both of these teams. It's their Iron Bowl, you know, or the Iron Bowl is, you know, Alabama and Auburn's UCLA, USC. But I just think, you know, that Stanford game, I think, is the best we are going to see from USC. And I just don't think they've played well enough, even since the Orgeron change, to make them a 3.5-point favorite. I like the Bruins here.
Brett Hundley is capable of changing games with his arms and his legs and also his hands for holding it on too long and taking a lot of sacks. The UCLA offensive line has been decimated by injuries, and left tackle Simon Goins is the latest casualty. And that USC D, led by Leonard Williams, is pretty brutal throughout the course of a 60-minute game. Tom, you have taken the Trojans. What do you like about USC?
Yeah, you just stole a lot of my thunder there, Chip.
Sorry.
No, it's like you mentioned, UCLA just lost yet another member of its offensive line this week in Goins, and the USC defensive line has been very strong, and particularly under Orgeron, because if there's one thing Orgeron has always known how to coach, it's defensive line play. So I look at that, and then I also see the fact that USC, while overall on the season has been pretty average against the spread, since Orgeron took over, it's actually 5-2 against the spread and 3-0 at home. So I'm taking the Trojans over a UCLA team that's really banged up.
Tom, if Notre Dame is going to be able to keep it close or even give themselves a shot to win, Brian Kelly says that the run game needs to get going. Cam McDaniel goes for 117 against BYU. We are 5 out of 6 taking Notre Dame to keep this close. In your projection of how Notre Dame at least covers this 2-touchdown deficit, do you think that they are going to be able to run against a very, very good Stanford front?
No, not well. I mean, I think they'll be able to move the ball, but not from what Brian Kelly's hoping for. For me, this is simply the fact that even though I'm worried about Notre Dame's defense without Nix against the Stanford, the offense that they run, I just don't trust Stanford right now at all. And for me, a 14.5-point spread with a Stanford offense that hasn't shown any kind of consistency or given me anything to truly believe in the last month, that 14.5 points is just too much. So I'm going with Notre Dame to cover here.
I'm very nervous about this game as well. Notre Dame settled for a lot of field goals in the red zone. They need to be able to make those touchdowns.
And well, field goals are better than Tommy Reese interceptions.
Hey, so, you know what? And that is as
take the good with the bad.
That's what's behind door three. So glad they did that. And how about this, guys? Tyler Gaffney, in the same breath as Kadeem Carey and Bishop Sankey, as the only Pac-12 rushers over 1,000 yards and averaging 5+ yards per carry.
Not an Oregon running back in the bunch, mind you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the biggest surprise.
All right, what do you think about this game, Jerry? You've taken Notre Dame as well. Are you nervous about it at all, or are you feeling pretty good about them keeping it close?
No, Brian Kelly, in general, has been pretty good as a road dog. The one instance they've been in this season when that was the case, they were at Michigan, and that didn't work out as well. But Notre Dame's defense has been playing much, much better since then. And I think, you know, I don't want to knock the Stanford offense quite as much as Tom just did. I think, you know, they were perfectly good up until that the USC game a couple of weeks. And this game is at home where they've been very good, beat Oregon, beat UCLA, survived Washington, although that wasn't a very good performance. Well, Arizona State was a much better performance at home. So, you know, for me, this isn't an easy call. But in the end, this just has the feel to me of like a 10-point game. Like, you know, Notre Dame's defense is going to play well. Stanford's defense is going to play well. The under is probably the right gambling play in this particular situation. You know, it just, to me, feels like a game that's going to be, you know, in that sort of 1.5 possession range, 7 points, 10 points. And, 14.5 is just too many. I like Stanford to win this game, and I like them to win it, you know, without too much trouble. I think, you know, the loss to SC has been sort of overplayed a bit, but I do think Notre Dame can keep it close enough to cover.
The stakes have never been higher for Duke and North Carolina on the football field. Basketball court's been very different, but as we are going into the battle for the victory bell, which will be in Chapel Hill, North Carolina has bounced back from a 1-5 start on the season and is actually favored by 4.5 points at home against the division-leading Duke Blue Devils, who with a win can win the ACC Coastal Division outright and punch a ticket to the ACC Championship game. Last year, this game was absolutely bananas. There was a fumble that Gio Bernard kind of picked up and miraculously took to the end zone, which Duke only answered by driving the length of the field in the last seconds and a last-second touchdown pass to Jameson Crowder. This is an odd game to pick just because there's so much on the line, and both teams have been sort of up and down in finding ways to win through special teams or turnovers. Let's start with you, Tom. What's your pick here, and what are you thinking as far as the way it plays out?
I'm actually going with North Carolina. There's a part of me that wants Duke to win just because Duke playing in an ACC championship football game is just awesome idea in my mind. But it's to me, North Carolina has just played a lot better over the last month or so than it was at the beginning of the year. And also, if you go back and look at North Carolina's losses earlier this season to teams like South Carolina and then getting their butts kicked by East Carolina, those losses don't look nearly as bad. The South Carolina one never did, but the East Carolina loss looks much better now because East Carolina has proven to be a pretty good team. But I just think that the Tar Heels are playing better football right now, is where Duke has been kind of, you know, getting by against some weaker ACC competition. But I don't really feel very confident either way because Duke has been a juggernaut against the spread this year and is 4-0 on the road, and North Carolina is 5-0 against the spread at home. So it's kind of, you know, competing trends there. So I don't feel good, but I'm going with North Carolina simply because I think the football gods are going to give us Virginia Tech and Florida State.
That's actually a pretty good reason to do it. I hedged my bets. I took Duke to cover and Carolina straight up just because I am anticipating a safety, a fumble rooski, a pick six, a punt return touchdown, something like that. Ryan Switzer, by the way.
A three-pointer.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, there you go. Basketball jokes. Jerry, what do you have?
No, I am right there with you, Chip. I took UNC straight up, but I took Duke against the spread because I'm tired of picking against Duke. I've done it each of the last 2 weeks, and I think I did in the Virginia Tech game. So I think the last three times we've had the opportunity to pick a Duke game, I've gone against the Blue Devils and been burned all three times. I'm tired of it. I want to be on the side of Duke this week, which is probably why they'll collapse and lose by double digits. But, you know, it's just, as Tom points out, they've been monstrous against the spread. They've won six in a row. You know, the last time they lost an ACC game was the first one of the season. It was week three at home against Georgia Tech. Since then, 6-0. I just think at some point you have to quit doubting them. And I didn't quit doubting them soon enough, but I'm trying to make up for it now. So Dukies, just please don't let me down here. I'm begging.
No bitterness like an expert picker scorned, and we'll get to your TCU pick here in a little bit. All right, number six, Clemson, at number 10, South Carolina. South Carolina's SEC schedule is done. A Missouri loss, though, launches them into the SEC title game. However, to think that either one of these programs is focused on their conference for these 3.5 hours on Saturday would be silly. These teams hate each other, and South Carolina has absolutely punked Clemson in recent weeks, resting Clowney, Quarles, Mike Davis last week. They all should be back. Let's start with you, Jerry. What are you thinking about in this game? We go back to our familiar expert picks podcast things. You're talking about Connor Shaw at home. They've owned the series. Like, it seems like it should be you're just checking off boxes as reasons why you want to take the Gamecocks.
Yeah, no. Well, the number one is that Steve Spurrier has absolutely owned Dabo Swinney. This series, I think, you know, Swinney is 0-4 against the spread against the Gamecocks, and it hasn't even been close. It's been, you know, last year they were favored by around 4 or 5 points and lost by 10. You know, if the Gamecocks have been like a 5-point favorite under Spurrier, they've won by like 20. It's just been completely owned by Spurrier since he and Swinney started locking horns. And, you know, this is a feisty rivalry. I think people, you know, outside of South Carolina or outside of the Southeast, at least, don't realize sort of how testy this can get. If you remember the little tete-a-tete in the press a couple of years ago where Spurrier supposedly said on his radio show, it turned out it was kind of taken out of context that, like, well, at least we're not Clemson. And then Swinney fired back with this awesome, like, 5-minute rant about how South Carolina was never going to be Clemson because Clemson had all these championships and, you know, this kind of stuff. These two programs, and I think these two head coaches, do not like each other. And I don't think that's going to change this season. I think the game being in Williams-Brice, as you point out, South Carolina is healthy. I still haven't really gotten over that Clemson's, you know, one real test for the entire season since they played Georgia in week one. The one test that they really had, they flunked so comprehensively against Florida State. And obviously Florida State's a better team than South Carolina. But going on the road for a game like this with the Gamecocks well-rested, And given the series history, I definitely want to be on Spurrier's side for this one.
Tom, before we get to Minnesota, Michigan State, I'm going to go ahead and just get your quick picks. What are you thinking about Florida State, Florida at 26.5? All right, what do you think about Georgia, Georgia Tech?
yeah, I'm picking Florida. The Georgia, Georgia Tech game. I actually know for upset alerts this week, Georgia Tech is my upset special. I think Georgia Tech is not only going to cover, but win straight up simply because Georgia at this point now, especially that they've lost Aaron Murray, I feel like the Bulldogs, with all the injuries that they've gone through this season, have reached that point where it's just like, I just want this season to end. And I think there's going to be a natural letdown from seeing their senior leader hurt and not being able to play. And you're facing an option team, which is always a pain in the butt to prepare for, as it is anyway. And when you're dealing with a bunch of injuries in your mind, mentally, a cut-blocking Georgia Tech offensive line is not really something you're looking forward to facing. So I got the Yellow Jackets winning this one straight up.
All right. Now let's say I've got a reason to like and a reason to hate both Minnesota and Michigan State. Minnesota got squeezed out by Wisconsin. That is a body blow caliber team in my mind. But then you've also got Rashid Hageman, which can be a monster in trying to slow Jeremy Langford. Jeremy Langford has six straight 100-yard games, but Michigan State could be looking ahead to that Big Ten championship game. 14.5 is a lot of points. What are you thinking about in this Big Ten matchup?
In which one? Michigan State, Minnesota? I'm sorry.
Yeah, Michigan State, Minnesota.
Sorry, my thing dropped for a moment. But I Minnesota, even though it lost last week against Wisconsin, impressed me quite a bit because I thought that Minnesota was just going to be outmanned by the Badgers in that game, but they hung tough. And if you can hang tough against Wisconsin like that for 60 minutes, I think you have a good shot of doing so against Michigan State. So for me, I think 14.5 points is a bit too much to ask for from the Spartans in this game, simply because I think that the Minnesota defense will be able to slow down Jeremy Langford and that Michigan State offense. And I don't trust Connor Cook yet trying to beat a team through the air exclusively. So I think this is going to be a tight, close, lower scoring-ish game. And then 14.5 points is too much in that circumstance.
Jerry, you've got Bruce and Dodd on your side, so you know that's you, having the Dodd on your side for a pick like this is good in a 3-on-3 showdown. What do you like about the Spartans covering this big number?
Their defense is the best defense in the country. Minnesota, they did definitely do much better defensively against Wisconsin than we expected, but they still only scored 7 points. I'm not expecting them to score any more than 7 points on the road at Michigan State. And, you know, I'm not sure their defense is going to play quite so well on the road 2 weeks in a row against these Big Ten heavyweights. You know, it won't surprise me if Michigan State doesn't quite cover 14.5. But again, if you're talking about, you know, the Gophers having no more than a touchdown on the board and you're only asking Michigan State to get up to 24 points to cover, I think the Spartans are capable of doing that much.
Well, we and you, the listeners, will be eating leftovers on Saturday. Wisconsin's defense has been tremendous. So, Tom, will they be eating Hackenburgers on Saturday?
Oh, look at you.
It is Senior Day in Camp Randall. Chris Borland, James White, Jared Aberderis, and others. This is a 23-man senior class that has seen some success. Penn State fell in overtime to Nebraska, though Hackenberg did win Big Ten Freshman of the Week honors. The three of us are all taking the Badgers to cover. The three seniors are all taking the Nittany Lions to cover 24.5. Tom, what do you like here other than Wisconsin, Camp Randall, and just running through Penn State?
I don't think three seniors have paid close attention to Penn State this season because that Michigan win doesn't look nearly as good now as we've seen how Michigan's fallen off the cliff. And frankly, Penn State this year has been a team to me that is nothing much more than a mediocre Big Ten team. So going on the road against Wisconsin, which loves mediocre Big Ten teams, especially at home where they're 6-0 against the spread this season, I just don't see this Penn State defense having much of an answer for the Wisconsin rushing attack. And Hackenberg on the road in a situation like this, in a stadium like this, I don't have a lot of faith in that, even if it is the end of his freshman season and he's gained plenty of experience. So I think the Badgers are going to cover this one. And I think, I think 24.5 might not be enough.
Oh, I agree with you. Jerry, where would you set this spread?
I don't know. I think 24.5 seems about right. I think there's enough reason to think that Bill O'Brien, you know, in his sort of season finale is going to have the Nittany Lions ready to play. And beating Nebraska, you know, was not an insignificant accomplishment, or taking them to overtime, I should say. But as Tom says, it's in Camp Randall. Wisconsin is 6-0. They're one of the best teams in the country. I don't think 24.5 is like way too low or anything, but I do like the Badgers.
All right, Jerry. Time to face the music. You picked against Baylor after riding so hard with the Bears. And first of all, for any listeners who don't have the expert picks pulled up in front of you as you listen to this, which is always what everybody does, clearly, I took TCU as well. I think this game has, you know, this is a new Big 12 rivalry. This is not a new rivalry. These teams know each other very well, and this game is odd often. It is close at times. It is sort of throws you the curveball, and TCU as the secondary to potentially slow Baylor. That's what I like. What do you like about TCU?
That's exactly what I like as well. Jason Verrett there in the secondary. That was what Oklahoma State did. It sounds suicidal against Baylor, but you know, they brought their guys up in press man coverage, you know, with Tevin Reese out, and said, all right, you know, Bryce Petty and Antoine Goodley and the rest of the Baylor receivers, you know, see if you can beat us one-on-one, and we're just going to make sure you get nothing on the ground. And Petty and those receivers could not do it. That part of that is because Justin Gilbert and that Oklahoma State secondary are awesome. But, you know, TCU has, you know, similar kinds of athletes in their secondary. TCU doesn't have nearly the kind of offense, clearly, that Oklahoma State does, but they looked very feisty against Kansas State last week, lost that game by 3 points. You know, this is their season finale. They're not going bowling. You know Gary Patterson is going to have them fired up to finish out the season with a win. They're at home, senior day. You know, I just really feel like this is going to be a close, tight game. I think Baylor maybe will have a little bit of a hangover after, you know, seeing so much riding on the line last week and then just coming out and sort of falling so flat. And I just don't like that matchup of this Tevin Reese-less receiving core going up against that TCU secondary. I like Baylor to win the game, but I'm not thinking it's going to be by more than 10 points.
Tom, do you think that Baylor gets it back on track and rolls against the, as Jerry said, 7-loss TCU team?
I don't think Baylor's going to roll as we're used to seeing Baylor roll when Baylor normally rolls, but I feel pretty good about 2 touchdowns against a TCU offense that I just don't really have a ton of faith in. I agree where Baylor's not going to put up 60 or 70 points or whatever against this good TCU defense, but I'm thinking 27 to 30 points might be all it needs.
The fact that Baylor doesn't stop ever leads me to believe that this could be a pick that I would lose on a late touchdown, but certainly a good one. All right, moving on. This is the Expert Picks podcast, and this is not an expert pick that we make per se, but I figured that with all of the conference title races narrowing down, we'll just sort of run down them real quick. I will ask each gentleman who they have, if a division is applicable, picking a division winner and then a conference title winner. We will begin in the American. UCF, Louisville, Cincinnati, the legitimate contenders. BCS title bid on the line. Jerry, real quickly, who you got here?
UCF, you know, all they have to do is win out, and there's not a whole lot standing in their way. They've got USF this week. You know, the Bulls, I think, are maybe improving, but they haven't improved enough to actually win that game. You know, you never want to say never with UCF. It's a team that, you know, can put itself to need a last-second touchdown to beat Temple. But I think seeing them actually go out and lose a game is a bridge too far. I like them,
Tom,
to take the AAC. Yep.
Tom, you like the Knights?
Yeah, UCF.
ACC, we got Florida State already clinched the Atlantic in the Coastal. Anywhere from a 3-5 team tie if Duke loses. If Duke wins, however, they do go to Charlotte. Tom, who do you have winning the Coastal, and who do you have winning the ACC?
I tipped my hat earlier. I got Virginia Tech winning the Coastal, and I have Florida State winning the ACC.
Jerry?
Yeah, I also ultimately think North Carolina at home should be able to end the Duke run and throw it to Virginia Tech, which is the best thing for neutral fans, because I think the Hokies are the only team that can really be more than a speed bump for Florida State. You know, I think the Noles, you have to pick them to win that game, the ACC championship, but at least I think the Hokies could make it interesting.
The Big 12, Oklahoma State has jumped into the driver's seat with their win against Baylor. They now hold head-to-head wins against Baylor and Texas, and a victory against Oklahoma next week would pretty much clinch it. Baylor and Texas both play this week. Who do you have, Jerry, coming out for the BCS as the Big 12 champ?
I don't see this Oklahoma team going on the road to Stillwater and beating that Oklahoma State team. It's not happening. Oklahoma has shown over the course of the season they're just not that kind of team. Oklahoma State's going to win this.
Tom?
Oklahoma State, I agree. I don't see Oklahoma being able to beat this Oklahoma State team right now at all.
Tom, you giving Michigan State any chance to knock off Ohio State?
Yes.
Are you picking it?
I haven't really gotten to that point yet, but I could see a certain possibility that I would pick Michigan State to win that game, yes.
Oh, I'm with you. I'm not ready to throw my chips back in that pile. I had them there earlier, but Ohio State's D is getting better, getting healthier. But what do you think, Jerry?
I think Ohio State's actually a little bit underrated at this point, which sounds crazy, but lots and lots of people think Michigan State is going to either give them a game or win that game. And Michigan State is very good, but their offense is just not in the league of Ohio State's. I think Urban Meyer is a fantastic big game coach, as we saw back in his Florida days. He hasn't really had one of those kinds of games at Ohio State yet, but I think he's going to have the chance to prove it in that Big Ten championship game. I think Ohio State will win that and win it semi-comfortably.
Stanford and Arizona State. Stanford jumped out to a huge lead before Arizona State went on a fury in the fourth quarter to leave us with a much closer final score. The domination of that first half is kind of hard to factor in because it was so long ago, but man, it's probably not that long ago in the mind of this Sun Devils team. Jerry, what do you think about that matchup next week?
I actually like Arizona State. I think they're a much better team than they were when they played Stanford the first time around. And I think when you have one of these championship game rematches, just the natural inclination is for the team that lost knows it has to go back to the drawing board and work as hard as it can to figure out, you know, what went wrong and, you know, try to fix things. Whereas if you're the team that won the previous meeting, you think more along the lines of, okay, well, just how do we shore up what we did right the first time? And to some extent, we saw this last year where Stanford blew out UCLA in the last game of the regular season and then really kind of hang on against the Bruins down the stretch at home in the Pac-12 championship game. I see something similar happening like this, except I think the Sun Devils are even better than the Bruins were last year. I think Arizona State wins the Pac-12.
Yeah, they needed a game-winning field goal from Jordan Williamson. What do you think about that conference, Tom?
I think a lot depends on where the game is played, but since I think Arizona State is going to beat Arizona this week. I'm leading Arizona State too, because like Jerry alluded to, it's really hard to beat a team once. It's much more difficult beat him twice.
All right, let's go ahead and wrap up. Last pick your champion, then we'll get to the listener requests. SEC. I mean, we've essentially made our predictions here, but let's also get your who do you think is going to be in Atlanta and who do you think's the winner? Starting with you, Tom.
Alabama versus South Carolina, with Alabama emerging victorious and heading towards another BCS title.
Jerry,
I think Alabama goes to Atlanta and gets a serious scare from Missouri. I think, you know, Missouri has been such a good team all season. That defense has been so underrated. Gary Pinkel, I think, is going to really have them ready for that game. And we know Alabama isn't necessarily comfortable playing against spreads with very good wide receivers. And hey, what is Missouri? They're a spread team with really good wide receivers. I think that game is another one that Alabama may have to survive at the end. But, you know, you can't pick against them at this stage. Like, you know, saying, oh, well, I think Missouri is actually going to win that is just looking for attention, I think.
Peacocking. All right, listener requests. Here is we got some Thanksgiving listener requests, and we also got the confrontation between Iowa and Nebraska. The Cornhuskers are 2.5-point favorites at home. Tom, I'm going to let you jump into shotgun and just drive this one, or hop in the driver's seat. What do you think about this game, and who are you picking?
The confrontation.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going with Iowa. I know I'm going to regret saying it because it's Iowa. I feel like Iowa, their coaches actually figured out how to run their offense last week in that second half of mid. and they figured out what Mark Weissman should be doing, and they figured out how Jordan Canzari should be used as running backs instead of having Weissman go outside. They had him stick between the tackles, and it was amazing results. And also, simply because Iowa this year on the road is 4-0 against the spread, and Nebraska has been much more mediocre, home going 3-4. So I think Iowa's going to take this one on Friday.
Ole Miss at Mississippi State. Jerry, I believe you and I both checked Vegas Insider, and I saw this number opened at 3, and we're anywhere from 3.5 to 4 to 4.5. A lot of different numbers across the board. Any reason why you think that is, and B, what's your feeling in this this battle for the golden egg in Starkville?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Ole Miss is one of those teams that's still a little bit difficult in some ways to get a handle on. They've, you know, had some major injury problems, you know, particularly on the defense. They had that big win against LSU at home and then, you know, again, weren't really particularly competitive with Missouri, had the big win at Texas, but then, you know, lost, you know, by, I think, 8 points at Auburn. So they've, you know, been kind of up and down. And so you're trying to figure out, okay, they're going on the road in a rivalry game. You know, how many points should they be getting here when Mississippi State has so much to play for, not just, you know, bragging rights, but they need this game to go bowling. So there's definitely more on the line for the Bulldogs, and they're at home. You know, I think there's a lot of reasons to think Mississippi State can pull this one out. You know, we've kind of seen over the last couple of years, I don't think favorites have done very well in this game. Last year, Ole Miss was kind of the new kid on the block, so to speak, in the rivalry and really sort of took it to them the same way we saw. Wow.
Proceed.
My train of thought wasn't just derailed. It, like, flew off an elevated bridge into a lake.
I'm sorry.
But anyway, Dan Mullen, you know, had the same kind of bump when he arrived, went in to face Houston Nutt as an underdog and just absolutely whipped the Rebels. So this is a tough game to call. I think ultimately Hugh Freeze knows that this is too important a game to Rebel supporters, and he has the better team. Like, just over the course of the season, the Rebels have just been better than Mississippi State. The Bulldogs have been feisty. Expect them to be feisty again. But at anything under, I think, a touchdown, you have to sort of vaguely lean towards Ole Miss.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you there. And apologies for throwing you off there. I'll let you take it. I don't blame you
for the reference. The reference was necessary there.
All right. I mean, you said it, and nobody said anything. So just going to let it slip in. All right, I'll let you go first on this one. Texas
sure.
Tech at Texas, battle for the Lone Star State. Longhorns, 4.5-point favorites. What's your read on this one?
I guess I like Texas. I don't know. Like, it feels strange to say, you know, well, I expect Texas as a favorite at home to cover because that's something they have not done particularly well in recent seasons. But I just – Texas Tech has just not been as good as they showed during that 7-0 start. Their defense has just had all kinds of problems. I'm not super confident in this pick, but the fact that Texas Tech is wearing those, like, Lone Star State uniforms and trying to basically troll Texas just seems to set them up for a disappointing loss. I think the Longhorns will pull it out.
Tom, what you got in this one?
I had to laugh because I actually have in my notes for the podcast today, I actually put, I guess I like Texas, which is exactly what Jerry said to start this pick. And actually, the same way I feel, is I don't feel good about either of these teams right now. Yeah, I guess I like Texas.
Yeah, I'm anticipating a not great game of football. It might be a little bit more fun over at Ole Miss, Mississippi State. Who knows? All right, locks and quarantines. Tom, you get to go first. Just go ahead, hit me with your locks and your quarantines. The games that you feel the best about, if it's something we've already covered, that's fine. And then the games that we should stay away from. And then, Jerry, you will take us home. Tom.
Two locks we have gone over. I will start with Florida State and Ohio State. I feel very good about both of those games. But off the board, I'm feeling pretty good about East Carolina against Marshall this week in a very important game in Conference USA. And I'm also feeling very good about my Hawaii Rainbow Warriors against Army this week at getting that first win of the season. As far as quarantines, I agree with Jerry as far as Spurrier and all that stuff goes against Clemson, but I still don't feel very comfortable with my South Carolina pick there. We mentioned the Mizzou A&M game. I don't feel great there. And another game I would stay away from is Virginia Tech and Virginia simply because I feel very, very, you know, scared about giving up 13 points with that Virginia Tech offense on the road, even if it's against Virginia.
What was the joke? They call it the Commonwealth Cup, but if it was just the Wealth Cup, Virginia would win it more often. All right.
Boom.
Jerry, give me your locks and your quarantines.
All righty. Locks. I'm with Tom. I think Ohio State absolutely dominates Michigan. I also really like Arkansas catching 25.5 at LSU. You know, Arkansas's looked terrible for most of the season, but I think this is a case of where, you know, this is the end of their season again, and they are going to put absolutely everything they've got left into pulling this upset. LSU basically has nothing to play for. They had their big game last week against Texas A&M. They know that they can basically go through the motions and still beat this Arkansas team. LSU is going to win by 2 touchdowns, maybe 3, but 25.5 to me is a little bit big. I like Arkansas there. And as far as one more outside the top 25 block, Vanderbilt at home minus 14.5 against Wake Forest. Wake has not been good on the road. They've already been eliminated from bowl eligibility, and Vanderbilt has owned them the last couple of seasons. There have been big, big wins for the Commodores. Vandy's playing very well at the moment. Winning that game against Tennessee last week was big for them. I think they absolutely roll against Wake. Quarantines, again, you know, this Duke-North Carolina game is not one I would want to touch. The Notre Dame-Stanford one, no. UCLA-USC, no. And Texas A&M in Missouri, to me, is the sort of keying, shining example of, you know, I just don't want, you know, to have anything riding paperclips. I would not bet paperclips on Missouri minus 4.5.
Oh, man. Well, I am right there with you on Arkansas, by the way. Weirdly close last year. Wouldn't be surprised if it's they cover that number as well. All right. My thanks to Jerry Hinnan and Tom Fornelli. You can follow them on Twitter at Tom Fornelli, at Jerry Hinnan. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Please let us know what you think about the picks. And if you have any requests for next week, we will be recording a show that will be a little bit more brief than this one. So if you're still listening, we appreciate you for hanging around. We had so much we wanted to cover. There's just no way we could trim the set list by any songs. So for Tom Fornelli and Jerry Hinnan, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be right back.